Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn, John Russell, and Kelly Jean Kelly. Dan Friedel will tell us what's trending today, and Anna Mateo will bring us this week's health report. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
American and Chinese officials agree that the two countries' presidents spoke Sunday over the phone. But exactly what was discussed in the phone call remains unclear. According to official Chinese media, President Xi Jinping warned President Donald Trump about some negative factors hurting U.S.-China relations. During the call, Xi said China-U.S. relations had made important outcomes since his meeting with Trump in April in Florida, state broadcaster China Central Television reported. But at the same time, the broadcaster said relations had also been affected by some negative factors. It added that China had expressed its position to the U.S. about those factors. The broadcaster did not identify specific issues discussed in the call. A White House statement, however, said Trump discussed the growing threat of North Korea's nuclear and missile programs with Xi. It said both leaders had repeated their commitment to working toward a denuclearized Korean peninsula. The statement said Trump also expressed his desire to seek more balanced trade relations with America's trading partners. It added that the two leaders were looking forward to meeting at this week's G20 meeting in Hamburg, Germany. Last week, China's foreign ministry protested to the U.S. over a planned sale of $142 billion in military weapons to Taiwan. The ministry called on U.S. officials to cancel the deal, saying it would be harmful to China's sovereignty. Other U.S. decisions have recently drawn criticism from China. These include putting U.S. sanctions on a Chinese bank for dealings with North Korea and accusing China of being one of the world's worst offenders of human trafficking and forced labor. Another issue causing tension between Washington and Beijing is Chinese expansion in the South China Sea. The U.S. Navy has conducted two Freedom of Navigation operations, or FONOPs, in the South China Sea since Trump took office. The operations are meant to challenge Chinese territorial claims in the area. The latest FONOP took place Sunday when a U.S. Navy destroyer, the USS Stethem, sailed within 12 nautical miles of Triton Island. Triton, which is claimed by China, Taiwan, and Vietnam, is part of the Paracel Islands in the South China Sea. The Chinese Foreign Ministry said in a statement the U.S. move was a serious political and military provocation. It added that such operations violate China's sovereignty and threaten China's security. China deployed military vessels and fighter jets to the area. U.S. officials said the Stethem was carrying out a regular right of innocent passage exercise. The operation, within 12 nautical miles of the island, was meant to show that the U.S. does not recognize territorial claims to the island. 12 nautical miles marks territorial limits recognized internationally. Trump also spoke with Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe on Sunday. The White House said the two leaders shared a commitment to dealing with North Korea. And the president also looked forward to meeting the prime minister at the upcoming G20 summit in Hamburg. I'm Brian Lynn.
America's population is becoming older and increasingly diverse, made up of people who are different from each other. Nowhere are those differences more apparent than in Houston, Texas. The city has seen an increase in the number of minority communities and is being called an example of future demographic changes across the country. Houston was once a city with large numbers of whites and Hispanic Americans. Many of the Hispanics have family ties to nearby Mexico or Central American countries. In 1980, around 52% of the total population was white or Caucasian. By 2010, whites represented about 25% of the total population, which grew from 1.6 million to 2 million in the same time period. People from around the world came to Houston for one reason, a longtime Houston resident told VOA, the chance to make money. Today, the city claims to be the most diverse in the United States. For many locals, this has created a sense of pride. They feel good about themselves and their hometown. Nikki Vasquez lives in Houston.
I'm Caucasian, and my husband is Hispanic, and we have my beautiful mixed babies, and I think here it's welcome and it's appreciated.
Li Xia is a religious leader at Houston's First Baptist Church. He moved to Houston from China when he was 7 years old. The First Baptist Church welcomes people, including non-Christians, from over 35 countries. We have welcome plastered through the front doors of our church, Xia said. Stephen Kleinberg is a founding director at the Kinder Institute for Urban Research at Rice University in Houston. He notes that many whites living in Harris County, which includes Houston, are age 63 or older.
63-year-old Anglos are not going to be making a whole lot more babies. And so you can go to the bank on this. No force in the world is going to stop Houston or Texas or America from becoming more African American, more Asian, more Latino, and less Anglo as the 21st century unfolds. Nothing in the world can stop that.
The United States Census Bureau gathers detailed information about the nation's population every 10 years. It also releases population estimates every few years. The last census in 2010 showed that whites made up 63.7% of the population nationwide. 2016 estimates show the same group now represents 61.3% of the population. The Pew Research Center notes the percentage is likely to continue falling in the years to come. Demographic changes are happening in other areas, too. For example, the European Commission noted in a 2010 report that European Union countries also are experiencing changes. Growth is fueled mainly by immigration, whereas the population is becoming older and more diverse, it said. Stephen Kleinberg says the changes in Houston's population are likely to continue. He wonders how the city and the country will react to future demographic changes. There is a law of human nature that says what I am familiar with feels right and natural. What I am unfamiliar with feels unnatural, somehow not quite right, he said. While recent arrivals are working toward the middle class, Kleinberg notes a growing underclass of white people with low levels of education. Jobs in industries like coal and steel have disappeared. Every community is seeing a growing middle class and a growing underclass simultaneously, he said. And that underclass is the great question for the sustainability of Houston and America in the 21st century. I'm John Russell.
The day will be the most memorable in the history of America, wrote John Adams in 1776. People will honor it with parades, fireworks, and celebrations, he added. Adams was talking about the 2nd of July. That is the day the Continental Congress voted in support of independence from the British. But the date written on the Declaration of Independence is July 4th. So, since 1776, Americans have celebrated July 4th as the country's Independence Day, and July 2nd, not so much. Several early presidents of the United States died on July 4th. They include John Adams, who became the 2nd president. Adams and Thomas Jefferson, the country's 3rd president, both died on the country's 50th anniversary of Independence Day. James Monroe, the 5th U.S. president, died on July 4th, 1831. And the 30th president, Calvin Coolidge, was born on July 4th. Most Americans celebrate Independence Day with barbecues, parades, and, yes, fireworks. But a few celebrate by eating all the hot dogs they can. Since the early 1970s, a restaurant called Nathan's Famous has organized a competition to see who can eat the most hot dogs in a short time. The event is now shown on sports broadcaster ESPN. It includes a women's competition and a men's event. Both are held in New York City, in an area called Coney Island. In 10 years, Joey Chestnut has won the men's contest 9 times. In 2016, he set a record at the competition by eating 70 hot dogs in 10 minutes. The 2016 women's winner, Miki Sudo, has won in each of the past 3 years. In 2016, she ate 38 and a half hot dogs. Sudo and Chestnut each won a $10,000 prize. Let's go back to those fireworks, probably the most common image related to Independence Day. Americans really, really love fireworks. The American Pyrotechnic Association, pyrotechnic is another word for fireworks, reported that Americans spent $825 million on fireworks last year. Where do most of our fireworks come from? China. By the way, we also import most of our American flags from China, too. Happy Independence Day. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
This is What's Trending Today. Chris Christie is the governor of the state of New Jersey. He has held the position since 2010. He is a well-known politician and was one of several candidates who ran for the Republican Party nomination for the presidency in 2016. He dropped out of the race in early 2016, however. Right now, New Jersey is having trouble passing its budget for the next year. When state lawmakers could not agree on the budget by midnight on Friday, Christie closed the government. Lawmakers must vote on a budget and send it to Christie for his approval. Many people who work for the state cannot go to work until a budget is passed because the government cannot pay them. Police stations, public transportation services, and hospitals remain open. But many state services are closed, including state-operated beaches. Many New Jersey residents planned to spend the weekend before the American Independence Day enjoying the water and sand. They were upset they could not go to state beaches with their family and friends. On Friday and Saturday, newspapers across the state published photos of people who had been locked out of state beaches and parks. Some people who were already camping in state parks on Friday were told to leave. One newspaper photographer decided to take photos from a different angle. He got in an airplane and flew over the closed beaches. He flew close to the governor's summer house. The house is owned by the state and paid for by taxes collected from residents. It sits along a state-owned beach that, because of the shutdown, was closed to the public. Andrew Mills is the photographer. He wrote about how he got the photos for the website NJ.com. He said that he and an airplane pilot predicted that Christie and his friends and family might be out enjoying the closed beach. They were right. As Mills wrote, there Christie was, with family and friends, on a long and empty stretch of beach. The photographer and pilot made 2 trips over the beach near the governor's home. Mills took many pictures of the group. More than 20 of them were put online. People got angry when they saw the photos, they did not think it was a smart choice for a politician to be enjoying a beach that had been closed to the public. Chris Christie quickly became one of the top trending topics on Twitter. People on social media called Christie corrupt. Many congratulated Mills on his good work. One writer said on Twitter that Christie was a fool and should apologize to New Jersey. Later on Sunday, Christie said that he was at his home on the beach, but that he did not get any sun. But after the photos came out, the governor's spokesman explained Christie's earlier statement. He said Christie was not directly in the sun because he was wearing a hat. On Monday, Christie posted a Twitter message about New Jersey's beaches. He reminded people that 190 of the state's 210 kilometers of coastline remain open during the shutdown for the public to enjoy. And that's what's trending today. I'm Dan Friedel.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. American English has many expressions related to clothes. Two of the more common ones are dress for the job you want, not for the job you have, and simply dress for success. A professional stylist takes these ideas a bit farther. She says that our clothes can influence how we feel, our confidence, even our ability to do a job. And new research supports her claim. Tara Luisi is a personal stylist in Washington, D.C. Through her company, Tara Styles D.C., she teaches her clients to find the clothing styles that work best for their bodies, careers, and lifestyles. Luisi says that, like it or not, other people size us up by the way we look. In other words, they make a judgment about us before we even speak. And part of what they are considering is what we choose to wear.
My feeling is you don't have a second chance to make a great first impression. So I think it is very important to have a look that's pulled together and conveys who you are in your status of life, I guess.
Here, pulled together means that someone's appearance is well thought out. Luisi says she feels this is very important. She notes that clothes are especially important in creating the professional image you want to convey.
No matter what, you should try to always walk out the door looking pulled together, if it be on the weekend or if it be during the work week. People take you more seriously when you are pulled together and dressed to a certain level.
But choosing the right clothes is not just about impressing others. A recent study suggests that people who are dressed more formally perform better at some work tasks. The co-authors of the study are psychologists Michael Krauss of the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, and Wendy Barry Mendez of the University of California, San Francisco. Krauss and Mendez compared more than 100 men from diverse economic and racial backgrounds. They asked some to dress in business suits. They asked others to wear sweatpants, t-shirts, and flip-flops. Then the researchers asked the participants to do several work tasks. One task involved making a business deal. Those wearing suits demanded more in their business deal. The participants dressed more casually were more willing to concede or give up. The other task was to use big picture thinking to solve a problem. The men in suits were more able to think about the big picture, the way a boss would. Those in casual clothes focused more on smaller details of the problem. This type of thinking is what you would expect from someone in a lower position. Krauss and Mendez published their findings in the Journal of Experimental Psychology. Stylist Tara Luisi says, to her, the study makes perfect sense. She compares clothing to armor, what a warrior puts on for protection in battle.
When you feel confident in yourself, I think you have a better day. So I use clothing as the armor to the world. So let's say you're having a horrible day, or you're nervous about your presentation, or maybe the big meeting. If you dress in something you love or you feel great in, you're going to walk in with more confidence.
In her job, Luisi sees how the right outfit can change the way a person feels. When she chooses clothing for her clients that look great on them, their backs straighten, they stand taller, and they start smiling.
They just feel so much better about themselves. So my goal with every client is to try to get that out of a person. I don't want anything in your wardrobe that makes you not happy. It should be happiness.
Luisi says that in general, people have a powerful emotional connection to their clothes. The intensity of people's feelings about clothes and their appearance has surprised Luisi.
Many people have an emotional connection to their clothing. You know, for a lot of my clients, there's some emotional level to it in that maybe they had a bad experience when they were younger shopping. Maybe they were overweight and they've lost weight, or maybe when they were young, they couldn't afford the clothes they can afford now. I've been in dressing rooms and closets and tears have been shed because it does bring up an emotional thing. And it was something I wasn't expecting when I first started this business.
For people going back to work or preparing for a job interview, Luisi has some advice for them. Research the environment of the job. Is it a casual working environment or formal? Is it creative or conservative? For a man, wearing a suit is not always the right choice. If the job is creative and casual, a suit might look out of place or strange. When going on a job interview, wear something new, or at least newer. Make sure your shoes are clean and polished. For women, don't wear too much makeup, perfume, or jewelry. And for your general, everyday wardrobe, Luisi advises to keep it simple. She helps her clients create what she calls a capsule wardrobe. This is a small collection of well-made pieces of clothing that the client loves. Luisi says a couple of expressions really represent her attitude toward creating a wardrobe. Less is more, quality, not quantity, and go-to.
Less is more, and I'm more about quality than quantity. So I would rather have people have a smaller wardrobe made up of the things they love that fit them correctly and that, you know, are a higher quality, and that's their go-to, the capsule wardrobe.
And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Anna Mateo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.